Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode one, or so I'm told. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
It's because I'm number one.
That's why.
That's why. Actually, that's exactly why.
473, but because Tony is number one, we're episode one. Earl is here as well.
Happy Halloween!
Yes, I thought you were about to say Happy New Year. I was so confused.
What is going on? Earl's 2 months early.
Or I mean, it depends. It could have been the Jewish New Year, which is only last month.
Yeah.
Or the Chinese New Year, which I would be early.
That's like February or something.
Yes. So, you know, you never know. You never know.
Yeah, we could just make up our own year.
As of this recording, it is the very last day of October, October 31st, All Hallow Eve. Did you find gentlemen dress up this year?
I did not. Did you?
No.
Yes, I dressed up twice.
I saw you dressed up over the weekend as Randy Savage.
Yes, so that was my proper Halloween costume. And then I don't know if you noticed or not, I may or may not have mentioned that I do work at a library. So the Youth and Family Services wanted to dress up as Waldo, and they sent out a memo saying, like, oh, it would be fun if Freddy dressed up as Waldo. So to put your own twist on it, so I was like, oh, I'll... just kind of a quick aside. Personally speaking, I always think dressing up as Waldo is a really terrible Halloween costume. I feel like it's just lazy. I didn't know what else to do. But I was originally planning to wear a costume anyhow, and I was planning to be a person from The Purge. So a mask, a weapon, and just kind of like a work shirt covered in blood or whatever. So when they gave that idea, I'm like, oh, that idea still works. I just need a Waldo shirt and hat. So I got to play Waldo as a participant in The Purge this year.
Nice. Which, I mean, that fits. People dress up for The Purge, so...
And, you know, there's a backstory to it because it's just Waldo getting sick and tired of people always looking for him. So he gets 12 hours a year to exact his revenge.
My team at work did win a pumpkin decorating contest. So there's that.
So I think I mentioned this on Twitter this week. I don't think I've ever carved pumpkins.
No?
No.
Ever?
Like, have you ever painted a pumpkin, or?
No.
Yeah. We're learning lots tonight, Tony.
way too much about Earl that I don't want to know. You've never played a Fallout game. You can't carve a pumpkin.
Well, now you ruined your...
You can't.
You think it's the new year? I mean, God, Earl.
So you've never carved a pumpkin.
I don't believe so. I mean, somebody's probably going to tell me I probably did it when I was a kid or something like that. I honestly don't remember. And I'm sure I've had opportunities to. It's just, I don't know. So it's going to be something I kind of put on my radar for next year of doing. And hopefully one day in like 50 years when I'm old and can actually afford a house in New York City. I want to decorate my house as well with all the extremities of a crazy person.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. So.
Like reach for the stars. Be a crazy person.
Reach for the stars. Okay, so you two didn't dress up, but what about the kids?
See, I always, like, I put all my energy into that now. So my kids were both Pokemon. One of them was Charizard. So nice. He had a little, like, Charizard hat and the tail and all that. And the other one, so he's way into Pokemon. So he decided to be Farfetch'd, which is not, like, one of the recognizable Pokemon for most people. So
they know, like, the original starters and maybe a couple others, right? Like, most people aren't getting a...
Although it was funny, the people who did know that he was Farfetch'd and look at him got super excited.
That's always fun. Like,
it's always fun, and this is the thing with Halloween costumes. I mean, it's like it's always because you always think, "Oh, this is going to be such an amazing idea," and you just realize how much of the rest of the world really does not have the same interests you do.
Yeah.
Because even with Macho Man, who I'm just thinking is like a huge 80s icon of professional wrestling, people are just like, oh, well, one, it's like most people know him as a Slim Jim guy.
That's true, yes.
Or they just don't kind of know. It's like, oh, that's a great costume because it's really colorful and bright, but they don't know who you are. Or even, crap, bad. Oh, I saw a lot of Us costumes this year, which I thought was really cool. But I think also on first glance that it's also not easy for a lot of people to notice because it's just an orange jumpsuit with scissors.
Right. Yeah, and while that movie was pretty big, if you kind of aren't in the know on that, it just looks like escaped mental patient.
Yeah, I mean, which is kind of what they were going for. But I was happy to see so many of those because I honestly didn't even think about that as a Dare for a Halloween costume. But it's visually distinct, and it's also something that, I mean, it's kind of in the Waldo camp that it's something you can kind of throw together at the last moment. I assume most people do not have orange jumpsuits in their closet, but if you get that, and again, a pair of scissors, and you're golden.
Yeah.
Did your kids pick which Pokemon they wanted to be, or was it?
They decided on their own.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, no. One of them, you know, Charizard, easy. We had to make the whole
Farfetch'd
costume, and I had to go to the supermarket and buy him a leak to carry around.
Yeah.
If you guys don't know Farfetch'd, it's basically like a duck crossed with an eagle who beats up other Pokemon with a giant leak.
So, is your son excited for Farfetch'd? Or does he not follow like the Pokemon
news? No, he does. He's way into it. He's like, I'm so glad that we picked Sword so that I can have Farfetch'd. Sure, go for it. And he was telling me on the walk home how it's one of the few Pokemon that when it evolves will actually lose a type.
Oh yeah, is it not? Because it's just fighting now, right?
It's just fighting. That's right.
Yeah. Interesting. I did not know it. I did not realize that. I mean, it makes sense, but I did not realize it would not be flying anymore.
Huh. Mine did not go as Pokemon.
Oh, no.
No. It went as a cheetah and as Winnie the Pooh, which I kept calling her the Emperor of China.
I'm sure she got that.
She did not get that joke. And then the two older ones did not get dressed up. So,
are they at that age?
Yeah, like the oldest is 16, and then the boy is 14. So
it's a boy. It makes me think of Bird Box. The boy, the girl. Yeah, because I have a friend whose son is, I think, 12 or 13. I'm just like. And he dressed up as Pennywise. I'm like, oh, this is the last, like, probably the last year we're really going to get him to go all out for Halloween before it's same until you go back into college. And that's when it's kind of like, oh, yeah, we should do this and get drunk.
Right. Before it becomes fun again.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm glad everyone had a good Halloween.
Halloween. I have so much candy now. It's not, you know, technically mine, but I'm taking it all.
But do you do the dad tax?
Of course. I've already had a Snickers bar and, you know, some Starbursts. It's been nice.
So they came back with so much candy that, like, I'm, like, separating out. Like, I'll take some of this to work. Like, it's my candy. And then I'm like, wow, there's still so much candy. So then I was like, we're doing a collection at work for a treats for troops or something like that. Fuck it. Like, just started throwing extra candy into a different pile. So, like, I'll just donate all this because they still have way more than they need. So,
my kids never make it all the way through the Halloween candy they get. Never. We always end up throwing a bunch of it out in, like, February.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Because what's going to happen with us is that a lot of my coworkers will just start bringing in candy over the next few days because it's, like, the stuff they don't want their kids to have. And then it's the extras that they're like, okay, we're not going to give you all of this. So yeah, I have a candy dish at my job now that I personally stock. So I'm like, okay, that, like the candy I bought finished today. So I'm hoping that they start bringing that in to fill that in for the next few weeks.
You should be good through Christmas.
That's usually what happens, but we'll see. Because it's also kind of feeding the entire office now, because everybody just stops by because there's candy right there. So
that is a good way to get people to come to your desk, girl.
It is.
Oh, that sounds terrible. Don't come to my desk. That's why I don't have candy there.
Do you not want people to talk to you?
Leave me alone. The problem is that I'm like, I'm the person in the office that everybody needs for stuff, so that they're always talking to me.
See,
I don't want you to encourage them.
See, this is what I was. I had this conversation at work today. I've had it with several coworkers. Is I try to build relationships with people because I don't want the only time that I actually talk to them is when I need something. Because then the only time you see them is like, crap, what do they want now? So I'm like, yeah. I want to have actual conversations about stuff. So that when I actually do ask for something, it's like, oh yeah, you know, we're cool. He doesn't bug me that much. I'm also very honest, and I told him, like, I'm usually just visiting you because I want to make sure that I'm not just visiting you when I want something.
It's like, I'm purposely visiting you so that you think that when I do need something from you, you're not thinking bad thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
Earl's all diplomatic
and I'm like,
things out.
Screw off.
All right. Well, we have our candy. Halloween is now over.
That's right.
The games are coming out.
The game of Halloween is out.
Is it?
Yes. Luigi's Mansion 3 came out today.
Oh, that is true. Ooh, yes.
Kit Kat.
So technically speaking, it's not a mansion. It's a hotel now. And it's not Luigi's. It's somebody else's. He's invited to it.
So this just all sounds like a lie.
It is a lie. Yeah, because I mean, misnomer aside, you know, the original story of Luigi's Mansion is that he wins a mansion that turns out to be haunted, and he then has to go through and kind of carry out a ghost and stuff like that. I actually don't remember if he still owns it or not. The first game came out 18 years ago. Sweet jeebus, time flies.
Wow.
Yeah, and this is only the third game in the series, so Nintendo's clearly milking this one.
They're going for the slow burn.
They are going for the slow burn, but yes, it came out today for Halloween, and I guess I can start there. I've played about an hour and a half of it or so, so I'm still really early into the game. Animation-wise, it's probably one of Nintendo's finest works ever. It's ironic since it's not actually Nintendo's. But like just the way that Luigi moves and interacts with stuff and reacts to stuff, it's just so great and so crisp. I'm a huge fan of Luigi because unlike Mario, he has much more of a personality. And it's something that they get to show often in these games. So the thing I like about this game, for instance, just early on, is that he's still kind of afraid of this stuff. But he's been through this game, this setup, two other times now. So there's a bit more confidence in him when he does stuff. It's like you don't start off the game with your actual poltergeist, which is his backpack, his Ghostbuster.
Right.
But you find it in a car, and when he finds it, he just gets like this confidence, and he's like, ooh, ah, and he puts it on, and it's like this cute animation, and he does a little dance when he puts it on, and then later on, you find the strobe light, which is, you can use to find like invisible objects and bring stuff to life, and again, because he's been through this, he's just like, ah, I know what this is, and he'll screw it in, and again, that confidence, and it's just so nice, the little animations they add to him and everything around him. Outside of that, so far, if you've played, I mean, I guess closer to if you've played Dark Moon, which is Luigi's Mansion 2, because this franchise, like Nintendo games, has no rhyme or reason on how it's named or numbered. it's very similar to that. Like I said, you have your main move, which is You can suck go. You can suck things into a vacuum. You could blow it out. You have the strobe light, which helps you find hidden puzzle or pieces, and also reveals like it brings certain paintings to life. You have a new move, which is kind of like a ground pound. When you press both buttons, and it will just jump up. It kind of shakes stuff around you, and you can use that to interact with things and turn on, you know, like hit stuff up or knock stuff off of a wall or something like that. And then you have the new move he has is like when you pull on a ghost long enough, you then get the ability to kind of slam them, and when you could kind of aim which direction you slam them in. And when you do that, you can also stun other ghosts, so it's really good for kind of like crowd control, so you don't kind of get swarmed by too many of them. But at the same time, early on in the game, it might change. It's like there's not like you don't fight a ton of ghosts, and they're not super aggressive, and they have super long lineup animations, so you generally have an idea of when they're going to attack.
I mean, these games are—they've never been super hard, right? So
no.
Yeah,
I mean, the first one was a GameCube launch title, which was infamous for being about like 5 hours and not that difficult.
Yeah, so sounds like a very pretty version of that. So nice, though. I don't know. I never finished either Luigi's Mansion, so
really.
I don't know if I'll get to this one.
I will finish this. I'm really curious to see what the multiplayer offers as well.
Is there a? Do you have an idea of what the multiplayer is? Or
oh yeah, so I mean, part of it is very similar to the multiplayer in Dark Moon, which is kind of it's like a co-op competitive experience where you kind of go through different rooms in the mansion and you clear out enemies. And part of it is like, if it, you know, it can be co-op, it can also be competitive. So you'll get egg points for the most, like who knocks out the most ghosts, who collects the most coins or gold, who finds like the most toads. So there's different types of objectives that you go through. And then there's like bonuses for working together and stuff like that. So I assume it's going to be very similar to that. The big difference here, I guess, is that you can have up to 8 players instead of the 4 that were in Dark Moon. And part of that is done by basically using the element that I've not been introduced to yet, Goichi, which is his gooey form that is impervious to pain, but will melt in like water and steam and gas and stuff like that. So it's more of it's like a puzzle mechanic for like single player co-op.
That's kind of cool. So that's I guess that's the big game for this week, and that just came out. So
that's not the only big game. Come on.
What was the big game for this like today?
For today. Okay. For Halloween, yeah.
Except there were some games that came out last week after we ended
there were a punch.
But there was nothing that came out this week.
No. Well, within the week that we recorded, I guess.
Yes.
There were a couple games that came out last Friday after we recorded our show. One of them being The Outer Worlds. Have you guys played any of that?
I'm about, I want to say, 8 hours into it.
Oh, so if you're Jeff, you're almost done the game.
Yeah, I am convinced that Jeff did what he always does, which is blast through the main story and ignore all the side quests.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, as far as I can tell, he kind of did that, but he's also done it and he's paid more because he beat the game twice now.
Right, but yeah, I guarantee he's still not done with the side quests. There's no way.
Yeah, there's different decisions you can make too, and that probably shifts how the game.
Well, from what right. I understand, from what I heard from people on Twitter and other places, it doesn't sound like the game itself takes your decisions into. It doesn't seem like it affects it too much.
Okay.
Hmm. Interesting.
Because I mean, that seems to be okay. And Tony alluded to this. He mentioned this earlier. I've not played a Fallout game before. So I don't really have a, I don't have a frame of reference for this. But yeah, I've heard some comparisons to it. Mostly it being like there's no romantic options, and the fact that like you're given different dialogue choices and stuff, but for the most part, it all kind of plays out the same. I mean, so, I only
know that there's decisions you can make, like, and align yourself with different factions that I would envision that if you made certain choices early in the game,
it would affect
play them out very differently, because certain things that you're driving for throughout the game, like, would be gone.
Right. Like, there's the guy who, the premise of the game is that you're like this person who is released from this pod, and there's a whole bunch of other people trapped in there. You can actually turn the person who saves you in, or you could not. I feel like that would have a big effect on what happens in the game.
Yeah.
I don't know, but probably.
We'll get to that in a bit. Like I said, I've never played a Fallout game. So I will say the first thing that was really kind of fascinating to me from a gameplay standpoint is combat isn't really driven by your personal abilities. It's driven by your stats. So it's so weird to kind of be shooting people and doing like no damage because the game's just assuming you're not hitting. And then
it's not quite that like simple. Like you do need to be able to aim and hit stuff.
Yes, but
you do more damage if your like stats are better.
Yes, you do, but you also can just kind of not hit them, being aimed at them.
No, like, no, that is not the case. It'll just change the number that you get. It's like Borderlands. Think of it like that.
Well, Borderlands always gave me positive feedback that I was doing well.
Sometimes that's like, but if you're aiming at a gun and it's in your sights and you pull the trigger, you will do damage. Your stats will determine how much. Your stats combined with like the weapon that you're carrying.
When you were playing, you were seeing that like you were completely missing, even though.
Yeah, it could have just been the day in the game where I was like hitting them, and I was more paying attention to the health meter than anything.
Okay.
And it'd be times where it's just like it's not moving, and then it would just chip away at it. And I'm like, I assume this is just this thing, like. You're not doing anything, or you're not doing a ton of damage to them.
Because Fallout 3 and New Vegas to an extent, and 4 did have like there were like weird issues where if you went like jumped into VATS, which is their kind of not necessarily turn based, but it's more of a slower paced combat option. And that bring then target different body parts, and there were percentages at hitting. You could miss there, but that was played out in more of a strategic kind of a setting than like a straight combat option. So, but I haven't played Outer Worlds, so I don't.
Oh, I'm surprised.
The combat does suck. I mean, let's not pretend that it's good. It's really floaty. Like you'll see in the middle of a gunfight, you'll have you have like a companion. Like you can have up to two companions. It's kind of like Mass Effect, and you'll see somebody like kneel down behind cover and start shooting at one of your companions, even though you're standing right next to them. It feels bad. Like the shooting feels all squishy, and it's not great.
That doesn't feel like a shooter.
It's definitely like not a shooter. Yeah.
No. And I can kind of buy it. Like it's like Chris mentioned with Borderlands. Like Borderlands isn't a straight up shooter because a lot of it is driven by stats, armor class, resistance and weaknesses, and that's behind the scene. It gives you the illusion that it's a shooter though, and that works sometimes. Because like for the most part you really don't have to, like, you have to aim in Borderlands, but it's not like you need a perfect headshot to do massive damage. It just kind of assumes you're in the range.
Yeah.
It's not like you need the Apex Legends or Call of Duty skills.
Yeah. Oh, and there is a very VAT similar system where you can like slow down time.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Like, aim your shots and see where they're going. And depending on where you aim at, where your enemy is, you can like blind them or like hit them in the crotch and have them like bend over, that kind of stuff. So that's in there.
So what do you guys think of the story so far?
The story is interesting. I don't know. It's told in a very like similar way to the story in, say, Fallout New Vegas would have been told, with like, you know, people walking right up into your face and you like having to make decisions between very distinct options. And also everyone sucks. Ooh. So like everyone is equally bad. It's really hard to talk about the story without spoiling it dramatically, so I'm trying to avoid it. But the initial decision that you make in the game is relates to a power plant where you have to either send power to one group of people or another group of people. And while you're hanging out with the first group, you're like, the second group, I mean, they're awesome. They're nice people. They left because this other place sucks. And then you go and meet them and you're like, oh my God, I don't want either of you to have any power.
You're all bad people.
So, yeah, then you have to choose which group of bad people you favor. But it's interesting that they have that kind of stuff in there. The sense of humor stuff is really Fallout-ish. I think the shtick there has gotten a little old. And they don't really use a ton of it. So it kind of avoids funny stuff, which I think is an unfortunate choice.
So it's more dry and delivery,
yeah,
of its humor. Okay.
Like the humor is more like, wow, these people suck. Look how much, yeah, that guy sucks. some of the characters are really fun. I've seen a lot of people talking about Parvati, who is like the first companion that you get. And she is a lot of fun. She reminds me a lot of BB from Mass Effect Andromeda. Oh.
Okay.
PB, that's her name.
The very peppy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a lot like that, except there's no romance options, which I think, on the one hand, I saw people complaining, but on the other hand, it kind of frees you up to interact with these characters more naturally. Because you're not spending the whole time trying to fuck them.
Right. Your end goal is more like, I'm trying to actually develop a relationship and have fun with these people, as opposed to, I want to bang you, so I'm just going to pick all like the options that are.
So there's a point at which you take her out to a bar. And she's never been to a bar before and she's never been drinking. And you can decide whether to like trick her into over drinking or or have her drink water to stay hydrated. Just
yay. Okay, well, we asked Tony on whatever endeavor you went to. I'm not
stuff like that.
Oh. You blacked out there for a second, Tony.
What?
It's okay.
I guess
I haven't had that much.
somebody didn't get their water.
I needed more water.
So I don't know, Earl. Since you've never played one of these games, like, where are you sitting on the fence with this?
Honestly, so far, I think it's really fun. I think it's an interesting set. I think it's because it's more of a traditional kind of RPG in the background that I find fascinating, and I'm kind of curious to see how it opens up. I like how you have these dialogue trees where there's like certain things you can pick, and you get options, and sometimes it's basically like a normal game where it's like, ask this question, and then you just kind of go down the list until everything's kind of emptied out. And then other times it's like, oh, I picked something that kind of continues this conversation. So we're not in this weird circle. And it's interesting trying to kind of keep your story in mind. Because like one of the early things you go through is you find the ship of the person who was supposed to rescue you, who your ship ended on top of them and you killed them. This is like within the So the ship thinks you are this person. So you can either tell the ship I'm not, or the ship was gonna think you are them anyhow. But like you go outside then, and I guess depending on the decision you make, there are like I was with two other people from this this company that's trying to sell you weapons, essentially.
Space toys.
Yes. And they were like, oh, whose ship is that? And I'm just like, oh, I don't know, but it's definitely not mine. And then just kind of remembering that I have to keep that in mind, that I am now playing this other character to them that is not me. So So just keeping that eye straight with who I tell it to and who I don't tell it to is interesting. I think it's fine. I wanted to play more of it. I got to the part where you kind of get to the first major town, like you're outside talking to like farmers and stuff, just picking up a bunch of side quests. And I just kind of stopped there because, I started it before my Halloween party, and it's just been a really hectic week to get back to it. But I do want to get back to it because it's very colorful. I like the options for creating your character. You know, one of my friends posted this article earlier in the month or last month about, you know, like a lot of games I do think are making strides towards having more better options for minorities and persons of color where, you can be black and not necessarily be. A lot of current games do this too, where you essentially have three shades of Oreos. You can be like the vanilla Oreos, you can be the normal Oreos, or you can kind of be like this weird milk chocolate Oreos, and there's like nothing in between any of those shades. And I'm happy that a lot of games are being more proactive with giving you more options. I was happy with the character creation module. And it's a very colorful world. I think it's interesting. It's been fascinating to go into it. I want to explore more of that.
Nice. I'm planning on jumping into it this weekend. I made the decision to play the other big game from last week. Also knowing that the Microsoft Rewards quests will kick over on the first, and there's almost sure to be one that's related to the Outer Worlds. So
this is true.
WWE 2K20.
I doubt that will be one.
You never know.
You do. It could be there. So I played Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
My God,
not to be confused with Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
You know, I say my God, why? But every time I see a promo for it, I'm like, I kind of want to play it because it's been so long.
So this has a campaign, which is one of the reasons I wanted to play it. The Call of Duty campaigns aren't ever great, but they are fun little, like, you know, 5 to 7 hour roller coaster rides. That are generally fairly enjoyable. Some more so than others, but this is one of the good ones. They bring back what the hell is his name? Captain McTavish, is that his name? Soap. He's back. I don't think you play. I don't think you really play as him, but you play as a couple different people. Some that are insurgents for this made up Middle Eastern country, and it's shooty shooty bang bang. Really, like they do a good job of interspersing the cutscenes. And actually giving the characters you're playing like an actual character instead of it just being like nameless dude number one that, hey, he's going to die at some point because that's what we do. But you're actually given they have dialogue, they have cutscenes together. Most of them make it throughout the whole game. So I think they do a better job with like characterization and story in this than they have in the past. It plays like Call of Duty, though. So if you don't like how Call of Duty plays, it's not going to work for you. And it does have it. Early on, it felt very much like, oh, they are trying to replicate Call of Duty 4. Like, there are a lot of scenes that you can draw direct comparisons to things from that game. Like, there is there's a scene where, oh, lie down because, like, the troops are coming, and don't move. Like, let them walk by you. Just like the in the, you know, the Pripyat section where you're in the ghillie suit. This is not like you're in a field of dead bodies, so it's much more gruesome, but you're pretending to be a corpse as these terrorist troops kind of like walk by you and you're outnumbered. There's the sniper mission, there's the mission, like there's the night vision mission, there's the I'm controlling the airship.
Yeah.
Like blowing stuff up from up top, which is always fun. Like, it shouldn't be because when you actually think about what you're doing, terrible, but it is like in video game form, it is fun to drop like these giant shells and watch the white outlines of the bodies fly away. It's set up for more of these, obviously. Like they're at the end of that, they kind of allude to bringing other characters that you know from Modern Warfare back. So I don't know. It was fun, and then I played the multiplayer. And I was like, I don't know.
I didn't miss this.
No, I didn't. I'm fine at it. I saw Jeff. Jeff evidently bought it too, and he hates it. Like just of course flat out hates it. I didn't enjoy it enough that I want to play more of it, but Call of Duty plays very specifically, and I don't think it's a style that I've ever kind of latched myself onto. Like Battlefield, it's a longer time to kill. Halos, there's a longer time to kill. Gears, Call of Duty is like if I see you and I shoot, you're dead. Like it's whoever sees the other person first. There's no getting around that. So it takes a while to get used to the speed of that game.
But I mean that's kind of why it I think you know it's I mean it is what it is. It still remains this juggernaut 15, 16 years later. It's because it is so kind of fast paced.
Sure.
It rewards you for saying that I've younger, really. I mean, it rewards you for killing a lot of people. But.
Yes.
You die quick, but you also respawn pretty quickly as well.
Yeah, it's not like you're out of the match. Like, unless you're playing one of those modes, like Search and Destroy or something like that, where it's one life, one kill. You have one life, and like the other team only has one lives as well. But those rounds don't last that long because there's only five people on a team, and either you wipe out the whole team or they wipe you out. So, it's fun enough. It's just it's not something I want to invest a ton of time into. Like, there's so many other multiplayer games that I would rather play, but I understand why people would want to play Call of Duty. They also have a co-op mode, Spec Ops. Which I was a little bit excited to try because at the end of the campaign, they kind of bleed into what I guess the Spec Ops mode would be. And they kind of say, oh, the story continues like over there. But all that is like a piss poor horde mode. I didn't enjoy it. I also could not get anybody I could not play with anybody. And that is not
Horde mode alone.
Yeah.
Sign me up for that.
Like, it's like at least with Gears, you can play with bots that are somewhat competent and you can do a decent job of like making your way through those rounds. This is just like, it's kind of like a Halo's firefight, like ODST, but like on like level, like round 4 or 5, when it's just tons of enemies coming at you. It's like, this isn't, I can't handle this. So I'm sure that if, you know, if a lot of people are playing it, that'll be fine. Did not go for me. So that's Call of Duty. It's pretty good. Like, I liked it. But I'm not going to go out and buy it. I rented it. I think $7 was the right price.
Oh, yeah.
And then today I beat Man of Medan, which Earl's already talked about.
If I'm curious to hear how your impressions compare.
I don't think it's as good as Until Dawn.
Yes.
It's weird. I think some of the dialogue felt really stilted.
Big time.
I kind of liked the main characters, the brothers. I was less a fan of Julia and her brother, although her brother died off like real quickly for me.
Oh, okay. So you did not rescue him on. So he did not escape the boat.
He did not.
And they're like, yes.
In fact, he died very early, and then like they kind of like leave it. Oh, maybe he's alive. There's this weird guy that you meet up with like 3 or 4 times throughout the game that he's outside of the game. He's kind of like, he lays out like, oh, you've suffered a casualty, but in the game, like they keep going, oh, maybe he's alive. But the final scene of that is him getting his eye pecked out. His corpse is dead. So it's like, oh, that's not good.
It's so weird because I don't know if they just couldn't afford him for the entire game or what, because like, and I, again, maybe I'm wrong. Because he escapes on the boat in my game, and then he does not reappear until the end of the game. And it, depending on how you do, like everybody on my team ended up dying. So he comes on the boat, and then he gets trapped on it, and he dies. And I'm like, oh, okay. So he disappears for like a good chunk of the game, comes back to die. That's fantastic.
So did you just say that all of your other people died?
Yeah, nobody escaped.
Okay. So I was able to keep the other 4 alive. But at the very end, something happened. And so there's this, so like, I think it's called the distributor cap or something. They take it off the engine. And the distributor cap broke as we were trying to leave. So we ended up with a weird ending where the military came in
and killed you because they needed you to keep their secret.
No, they didn't kill us, but they did. And we ended up locked up in a jail at the end. And all you can hear is Julia screaming. I don't know. I liked the characters. I liked the idea of these pirates who primarily spoke in French.
But they also disappeared pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, I had them throughout most of my game.
No, they're throughout the game, but like as far as, I mean, okay, and again, it might have been different because I was playing co-op.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and I guess this is something we can, because I don't know how much of the game, I don't know how it works for single play, like how much of the game you get to see, or how much of this stuff plays out just outside of you not knowing and catching up later on with these characters. Because there would be times where they would just disappear on my end, but my friend would be engaging with them or in something.
Hmm. Yeah, because there's definitely parts where like you are split up. Like whoever you have on the boat with you is not together. They've split up for whatever reason. So, like a good portion of the game, like Fliss, who's the captain of your little trawler, and Alex's brother Brad, they're like out together where, and then Brad and then Alex and Julia are off on their own as well. They individually will run into different members of that pirate gang. So I don't know. I don't know where like your lineup fell. So I do want to play the co-op because that sounds interesting. Like you would only see certain portions of it. And I'm not sure if I saw everything or if playing co-op in that way would have given me different perspectives on it. I didn't like the narrator either. I found it weird.
Actually, what I found weird but really funny is like that hardcore metal entrance he gets.
Oh, that's... yes. Like the...
That was so jarring.
Like the weird, like weird, almost TV entrance, like a TV show,
yeah,
theme. But it's like it doesn't fit the rest of the game at all.
Not at all. And I'm like, why does he get this big entrance? Because it's like him walking down the hallway. He gets this like the credits, the names, the music, and I'm just like, why?
And I guess because he's going to be the constant.
Yes.
For these, I don't know. I hope they tone him down a little bit. Not necessarily tone him down, but give us less interaction with him in the next one.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't know. It was cool enough.
Yeah. I mean, my beef now is, and I think I mentioned it before, that I was buying it for a friend to play with, and then when he got mixed reviews, I'm like, oh, I'll cancel it. But it was too late to cancel, so I ended up buying it to play with them. And then, like, what I feared would happen was, like, I'm like, by the time it's, like, Halloween, it's going to be, like, $15-$20, and that's where it is now.
Yep, I paid $20 for it, so, yeah. I almost bought it when you did back, so it came out on my birthday, but I got a Blair Witch for free that day, so I passed on it, and then it came up on sale as part of the Xbox Spooktacular sale, and it was $20, so I was like, that's not bad. I'll plop $20 down on this, and
yeah, it's a fun weekend.
Yeah, it's
it's like 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, I think I finished it in like 4.5 hours. I do want to play it again with friends. In fact, that's the first option on the menu.
Yeah,
don't play alone or play alone. I like the idea of like, hey, we designed this for you to play with other people. That's not how I played it, but
I think that's what they want to encourage, because a lot of it is designed around that. But like I said, when I talked about it after, it is designed around, and it isn't, because a lot of the transitions and stuff is really janky, because they never timed out. It's impossible to figure out how do you sync up two people playing independently of each other to be perfect, but there are times where it's just like, you don't need to, like, make both these cutscenes finish.
Yes. And like, there's, I just wonder how, if like the person you're playing with, if they are like, maybe they're a little more mainline and they're stopping to hit every shiny bit. But you are, like, you're exploring every part of the ship that you can see, and you're clicking on everything. I could see how that would delay it, and like the other person would be like, "Well, I'm done. I'm already here."
Yeah.
I don't know. I wish it was a little better. Like, it Until Dawn, I thought was great, and maybe it was just the setting and the way that one plays out works better. Well, maybe like a slasher film plays a little better.
There's a lot more characters. I think a straight up slasher works better than the supernatural stuff, because I don't like them. I mean, not that I dislike it, but introducing like your character scene stuff, and it was really funny because, again, playing co-op, it's like my friend's character would be seeing stuff that I'm not seeing, or it just looked really weird because and this happened in Gears of War as well. Like, the other character, like, not JD, what is the main female character.
Oh, Kate.
Kate would be having visions, and the other person just sees her standing still.
Acting crazy.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, this is really awkward, which I guess is the reaction they want you to have.
Yeah, they actually call that out in Man of Medan. They call it out, like, when Alex, for me, has a revelation that he sees something up ahead, and he, like, makes a comment, like, ah, and Julia's like, what's wrong? He's like, you didn't see that? Then he's like, wait, of course you didn't see that. And then he kind of, like, lays out exactly what the Manchurian gold is. But I wonder if you weren't playing that character, if you would have even gotten that.
Yeah.
So maybe you didn't understand, like, why am I seeing things and they're not seeing things? Which would be kind of funny.
We're all seeing things.
We are.
I see dead people.
Dead people. Dun, dead dun, people. Dun.
But I think that's it for stuff we've been playing, unless you guys played anything else that you want to talk about. Nothing really new.
I don't know if Tony does. It's not new, but I actually started it this week at work. I actually had a Sushi Strikers, which is a Switch game from Nintendo that came out last summer. And I picked it for like $5-$10 a few months ago. And it's just kind of been sitting in my Switch carry case. I'm like, oh, let me give this a try. And honestly, so far I'm really enjoying it. It is, what is the best way to describe this? It's essentially kind of like a puzzle game. It's like a puzzle RPG type game. So you are a sushi striker, which means you fight enemies with sushi, and you inhabit the spirit of sushi-dom. And
sounds amazing already.
So what happens is you have conveyor belts that have different types of sushi going through. It's mostly a card game. And then you have to match up the different sushi plates and create these combos of them. So you can do like two plates, or you can go up to like 20 or so. And once you do that, it kind of, the plates stack. And you can have up to 5 of these stacks at once. If you do a 6th one, it will automatically attack your enemy. But you can also store them and use them as combos by just kind of free freaking your different plates and aiming them at your enemy across the way. So yes, you eat the sushi and then you attack your enemies with empty plates. And it's it was released on the 3DS and the Switch. And it's curious to me that this was intended to be a touchscreen game. I've already played it in handheld mode, and I've just been wondering how does this translate to controllers. Because it does not seem like it would be really fun in controllers, just because it would be, because it's on, like I said, it's on the conveyor belt, and the conveyor belt, like, you know, the conveyor belt, one's moving left to right, the next one's moving right to left, and the next one's moving left to right, and then there's a shared one where you and the enemy both have the same sushi belt you can kind of take from, and the idea is to kind of go up in the different rungs, and I'm like, that just seems really cumbersome with the controller, having to use the analog stick and then pressing A to do it, where with my fingers a lot faster. And then you can also hold down a plate on a certain item to make the conveyor belts move faster to get those combos. Because again, you're supposed to build up a combo, but you have to do it within 7 seconds or you lose everything. And so yeah, you build that up. And then as you're doing that, as you're attacking your enemy, you also build up like your special moves. So I have two special moves right now, or my sushi spirits. One is it will turn everything into, essentially just, it will just make everything into one thing you can grab at once and get like a 20 fate combo. And then the other one will turn your sushi into fruits, which then restores your health. So again, and then there are health items that come up throughout the game and stuff like that. But it's a really kind of simple, but, you know, simple to play, easy to play, hard to master type games. You'll get a bunch of different sushi spirits. It's an RPG, so you'll a very basic RPG, so you can increase your stats. You can, you know, equip items. You can level up your sushi spirits, and as you level them up, you'll get access to different types of sushis you can eat. So, like, you know, like I said, it's color based. So you start off with like basic plates, and then as you get deeper into the game, you'll get more solid plates, and the different plates have different attack values. So, like, a gold plate is worth more than like a red rim plate, and then like a solid red plate is worth more than a red rim plate. So yeah, there's a lot of different stuff that goes in on your head and stuff like that. And again, I also love, it's a very anime-esque game. So I love the art style. I love how over-the-top and goofy it is. I love how they kind of make sushi this very serious thing to share to the world. So yeah, I mean, you can usually find it for like 10, 15 bucks now. So far, I would really recommend it.
Is it how long are the levels? Like, they pretty short burst, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like a mobile game, in that, like, each level, you have like three additional objectives to complete, and a lot of them are like time based, and a lot of them are like complete this level in like 75 seconds or 85 seconds.
There's a lot of replayability to it, then. But yeah. It's also bite sized enough that, like, if you're just looking to jump in, play something real quick, you could do a couple of them.
Like, what I started playing it at lunch because the weather's turning, so I can't really go outside now. So I'm like, this is a good way to kind of kill half an hour after I eat. And that's been really working out for me this week. So yeah,
nice.
it's a nice, no pun intended, bite-sized game.
Nice, Tony. You play anything else?
Tony's not going with us.
No, it literally. He just dropped off the call. Well, I guess we'll do some short news here before we wrap this up. You did drop a couple news items in.
Yeah, for some reason I thought more stuff happened this week, but maybe it's more of, a lot of it isn't gaming related exactly. It's like the Kotaku thing with Deadspin and their new owners.
Yeah.
And then The Witcher I was going to put there, but I'm like, technically that's based off of a book, and this is, the adaptation is the book and not the video game.
So the Netflix series is based on the book, not
the video game,
not the CD Projekt Red. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so the big thing was, it's the end of the month, which means that everybody's dropping their Q2 fiscal stats. So yeah, like, the big thing for Sony is the PlayStation 4 is now the second highest selling home console of all time, only behind the PlayStation 2. And I think it's at 102 million or something like that.
Congratulations to them.
Yeah, it's weird. And I know we just always seem like Sony hate. It's just weird because I feel like there is not. I feel like consoles this generation just don't feel like they have permeated the mainstream conversation the same way like the 360, the Wii, or the PS2 did.
Right, like and maybe it's just the nature of us getting older, but I think we're still pretty in tune with what's going on out there. But yeah, I don't hear the talk about like the PlayStation 4 like I did the PS2 or the PS1 or the N64 or the 360 last generation. Like, that was like, a lot of people are like, oh, like, what should I get? Like a PS3 or 360? Like, I didn't hear a lot of that from people.
Yeah. Like, I feel like it's, and it could be a good or bad thing. I feel like a lot of people have just gotten to the point where you just kind of have to have a console for these games. And it's not necessarily a matter of like which is the most powerful or which is the most popular. It's just like, oh yeah, I have a PlayStation 4 because I enjoy Madden. And it's not like, oh man, I bought a PlayStation 2. You need to check out this GTA 3 game. And I think part of that is that I guess we're so ingrained with, like, we have these mega franchises now. Like, the industry is so defined. now that it's hard to if and I think we've had this discussion before, maybe I had it with other people. I feel like we haven't really gotten a game this generation that, well, that's not true. We have Fortnite. But outside of that, I can't really think of many that have kind of crossed over into, again, the mainstream conversation as a new IP that you have to be excited for.
Yeah, that's, I think Fortnite is it, right? Like, I don't think there's been another one that has been massive in the way that, things in the past gens have been.
Yeah, not like Minecraft or Call of Duty, Modern Warfare or Wii Sports or GTA 3 or GoldenEye or Resident Evil or Super Mario Brothers. Like the games that you knew, like that was, I need to, if I'm not playing that game, you're not in the conversation.
Yeah, it's been a generation. I guess Destiny, to a point, had a little bit of that, at least within the gaming community.
Yeah, Destiny had that before it came out. And I feel like after it came out, it did not have that. And it's so weird because, it's not in the news, but like I think EA announced this week that Apex Legends hit 70 million players. And I remember when that came out. And I literally sat there and I was like, wait, that game came out this year.
It did.
It does not feel like a game that came out this year. Like, it feels ancient.
Yeah, it feels like it's been, and then I don't know why that is. But a lot of the games like Resident Evil 2 came out earlier this year, and it just feels like it was so long ago.
Yeah, I've mentioned this before. This is something we might do it next week. Who knows how the schedule shakes out? It's one of the reasons I was like, oh, we should do a show that kind of recaps this year. Because, yes, I think of stuff like Apex Legends, Resident Evil, Kingdom Hearts 3, Devil May Cry 5, like games that came out this year where you're just like, wait, oh yeah, that was a thing.
But they're only a thing for like a week or two. And then they're no longer a thing.
Yeah, like it's one of those things, and it's a problem with the industry. It's a problem, I think, with social media, and I don't want to be one of those people who blame social media for a lot of stuff. But I do think we have moved into a very digestive system for a lot of stuff, where it's like people are more interested in the hype cycle leading up to release than they are post release discussion. And this isn't new to just video games. I feel the same way about movies and TV shows. It's one of the reasons why I think Warner Brothers announced rolled out HBO Max this week, the announcement of that, and Disney did the Disney Plus go, and both were like, oh, we're gonna release our TV shows weekly. And it's like everybody prefers binging because you can watch it all in one weekend, but the thing is, you watch everything and then you're done, you move on,
yeah, and the conversation's over.
It's yeah,
like, oh, Stranger Things came out and then everyone was done by like 4th of July. They were done talking about it.
yeah and that's a perfect example. It was a show that, like, the hype for season 3 was so massive. And then you think about the fact that season isn't even 4 months old, and we don't talk about it.
Yep, it's over. It's like, when's season 4 coming?
Yeah.
People view seasons of TV now as like we would view episodes, because they consume them all in
one go.
Such a short period of time. Yeah, like 2-3 days, sometimes one if you're completely crazy. I am excited that Disney Plus is taking that approach with like The Mandalorian, where it's like they're not going to drop all 8 episodes or whatever all at once, and I can come back every week.
Yeah, and there's something to be said about building in that audience and the discussion. And to tie it back all to the point, it's like I feel like video games have not been able to figure out that tale yet, where it's just kind of like, oh, this game is out. Okay. Like, you know, we mentioned Call of Duty, but, you know, we talked about Gears of War. Gears of War is not even 2 months old yet, and it feels like ancient news. You mentioned Man of Medea, you played that. The game is just two months today, and yeah. It feels like ancient news.
Yeah, it's like talking about it is like, what is he talking about this old game for?
Yeah, because you brought that up, and that was honestly my first thought. I'm like, oh, that's, like, wait, it's not that old, though. And it actually makes sense for this time of the year. You know, stuff like Fire Emblem or Link's Awakening feels so ancient, but it's like they're not that old. And one of the things we do that, and I don't know if we do because I don't pay attention as much as I should. I remember having this on my old show, was we were trying to be very cognitive of when we talked about video games of using the present tense, because a lot of the times when you talk about a product, we talk about it like it no longer exists. Like, oh, that movie was good. That game was enjoyable. And it's like, no, it is good. It is enjoyable because it still exists. I get the talking about it in past tense as far as like I played this and I enjoyed that. But like, we don't transition to the fact that like if you're talking about like your experience with it, you can still talk about it in the present tense.
Right. Like I am still playing Gears, so that game is still present for me, but for so many other people, it is now in the past. They've moved on to Outer Worlds or Call of Duty or you know, Luigi's Mansion, or very shortly Death Stranding. Like they've forgotten those games that came out in July and August and early September. It's a shame.
Yeah, and like I said, this is something that's industry-wide, so I don't know how you change that. I don't know how you change how people talk about something, especially something that is so trivial, because you're still talking about the game.
It is something that, while I found Joker to be in the middle for me, I do kind of appreciate that it has had this long tail. And there are still people kind of, you know, talking about it and enjoying it. Maybe not so much on social media, but, you know, it was still the number one movie again this weekend. So, it was close, right?
Like, yeah, but no, and that's what I mean. And I think, I don't want to get into it too much because this is a gaming podcast, but I look at it like the Martin Scorsese or, what was the other Francis Ford Coppola comments about like, the MCU, which is something I've criticized it for before, and it's that I like the MCU. I've seen every film in that universe in cinema. Some of them multiple times. I own almost all of them at home, so it's not like I don't watch them and I don't rewatch them. But in a lot of ways, those are the height of like you see them opening weekend. Because everybody's going to talk about it then. And then you don't talk about it again. Like, Endgame is like the biggest movie of the year. And nobody's talking about it anymore.
No, because 2 weeks later, we moved on to whatever was next.
Yes, like, what is next for the MCU? Like, it took me... you remember today because of how the Halloween costume ranking came out. And Captain Marvel was number one. Captain Marvel was up there with Joker. And I'm like, all right, that came out this year.
Been such a long year.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, like, and I mean, on the flip side of that, it's like there's just also a crap ton of stuff coming out.
Yeah, it's almost too much.
Yeah, and it's video games, it's movies, it's TV shows, everything, and it's not going to get any better with 50,000 other streaming services coming to launch over the next 6 months.
That's true. There are $100 in streaming services.
Yeah. Speaking, we talked about PlayStation View closing down last week, right? No, we did not.
No, I think that
was announced this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, so PlayStation View has closed down. I'm sure the consumer is very upset about that. But yeah, that closed down. Also not in news, because I'm really terrible at planning this stuff out. Ubisoft had their financials this week.
They did, yes.
And they were pretty honest with themselves. They were upset by the performance of Breakpoint and the Division 2. And yeah. They did not mince words about that.
And and it also kind of prompted, I guess, their delay of all their other games that are coming out.
So they delayed Garden Monsters, they delayed Watchdog Agents, and they delayed what was the other one?
It's a Rainbow Six game.
Is it?
I don't know. I thought that's what I had heard.
Oh, maybe. But yeah, they delayed everything into next fiscal year. Which means the earliest we'll see any of them is April, which, I mean, I think that would mean at minimum that's at least a 2-month delay for any one of those games.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be fascinating because, you know, it gets to the point then where it becomes, do you delay the game and release it still, or do you kind of just delay it and make it a cross-gen launch title? Because at some point, that's going to have to be a thing. And if this is already coming out in like May, June, like at some point when do you call it and be like, okay, we're just going to do this as like a PlayStation 5, Xbox 2.4 launch?
Yeah, Watch Dogs Legion, Gods and Monsters, which you already said, Rainbow Six Quarantine were all delayed. Also,
no.
Tony's pirate game, Skull and Bones, which, mind you, was announced in 2017.
Right. That game's a myth.
I did not remember that was still a thing until they delayed it.
It's now unlikely to see the light of day before 2021. That's the game they took the pirate stuff from Assassin's Creed, right? The boat combat stuff, and that's what they were making there.
Yeah, I think they tried to make it into an MMO. I think it's causing them problems.
Oh, they tried to make it into Sea of Thieves. Oh no.
Or they probably tried to avoid what happened with Sea of Thieves and like, okay, we've got to make sure we have content. Like Sea of Thieves, has improved since then, but yeah, that initial launch is really rough.
Right, and if you're not in the Sea of Thieves community, like which has evidently stayed with the game, we're just not hearing about it. So, oh well. What else we got, Earl?
So yes, that, and then Nintendo financials. Switch is at almost 43 million. Switch Lite sold, I think, 2 million in 10 days. Smash Brothers, Mario Kart continue to do amazing. Link's Awakening, I think, is at almost 4 million. Fire Emblem is at 3 million. So, overall, and I really don't know how you transition from that for them, but the Switch has been doing super well for them. And I think the big thing that they've said is that they are looking to bring more 3DS franchises to the Switch. And I don't necessarily know what that means because like, Pokemon is really their big handheld-only franchise. I don't know many other franchises which is just like, oh, yes, this is only on handheld and not on our consoles.
Yeah, so, I mean, they moved Fire Emblem over already, right? Like...
Yeah, but even Fire Emblem, there was a game on the Wii.
Okay.
It became popular with the 3DS ones, but yeah, like the GameCube had one and the Wii had one. There's minor stuff, which is what I think they might mean, like Dillion's Rolling Western, Rusty's Real Deal Baseball, Brain Age. I could see stuff like that. But yeah, I mean. Like I said, I was playing Sushi Striker earlier, and I think Nintendo has done a really good job with the Switch. I think they've had tremendous back ends of years, not necessarily start of years. I think last year's start and this year's start are kind of weak, but they make it up in the back half where it's just kind of been on sale since Mario Maker. But I do kind of miss like their quirky experimental titles, like Sushi Strikers, like Rusty's Rodeo Baseball, like Pushmo or Crashmo, or Steel Diver Sub Wars. Those kind of games where you can kind of say like, this is them being like, you're gonna get a small budget, but you can do whatever the hell you want.
Nice. What else you got?
I think I was gonna say, I think that's it for news. I just
Yeah, there was they announced the PlayStation Plus and Games with Gold this week.
And we all cried.
I was gonna say I did not count it as news because I saw what they announced and I'm like, I'm good.
I mean, PlayStation Plus is fine. Like they are giving Neo and Outlast 2 for free. I remember Jeff liking Neo quite a bit. It's like a Dark Souls samurai type game. And on Games with Gold, it was Sherlock Holmes, The Devil's Daughter, which is a good game. Just I've played it already. The Final Station, not sure what that is. It doesn't look good. Joyride Turbo and Star Wars Jedi Starfighter, which is actually a decent arcade space sim. Not sim, it's like a flight game, like a flight combat game. So
now maybe I'm confusing this with something else. Is Joyride not the one that needed Kinect, or is this like a sequel?
This, I believe, is a sequel to that, that didn't require Kinect.
Okay.
Joyride Turbo, a controller-based arcade racer, precision handling, speed, and crazy stunt mayhem. So yeah, it's the sequel to Joyride, I guess. The one that you had to drive with your hands and Kinect, and with Joyride Turbo, you can use a controller. So that's good. I don't know if I'm going to play that. It is free though, so.
Yeah, at this point, I assume this is kind of what we all do, is I just kind of claim them so they sit in my library.
Yep.
And yeah, that's pretty much as far as I've gotten with the last few. Well, no, I think I downloaded something recently, PlayStation Plus, but yeah, I really don't. I just like, oh, it's a game to add to my collection, because, I mean, you're an idiot if you pay for Gold or Plus and you're not using that.
Yeah, if you're not taking at least claiming them,
yeah.
Like, what's the point?
Like, I'm almost certain Sony knew that, because sort of you actually claim the game before you download it on Sony. You can download it separately. I think Xbox tends to start the game, then you have to like cancel it or something like that.
Yeah, like you click the get or purchase, and it starts to download, and you have to cancel out. Whereas, yeah, Sony just like, do you want this? Sure. Do you want to download it? Hell no. All right, we're just going to drop it in your library. That's smart.
Yeah.
So I guess that's it. Next week is Death Stranding, but later in the week after we record. So we may take Earl's idea and kind of do a recap of the year, because we're getting close to Game of the Year time and the end of the year here. End of the decade, in fact.
End of the decade.
So we will have some stuff.
I am also super fascinated, because in just a few hours from now, Death Stranding reviews will be out.
Yeah.
I have no idea what to expect from that. So no. I'm sure it's going to be fun either way.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear. I kind of want to hear what the hell the game is. Like, outside of something that's pretty. Like, what is it?
Yeah.
What is a Strand game?
I am really curious to see how it reviews, in the sense that I'm kind of curious to see what people say or don't say about it, like what they dance around saying, because this is something like super straightforward. I'm curious how many people are like, who will give it the benefit of the doubt because they didn't understand it, but it must mean that is something creative and unique.
Right. It's brilliant because Kojima did it. I don't understand what it is, but Kojima did it. So it's obviously I am not smart enough for it. It is brilliant game. I am very interested to read reviews of that tomorrow morning. So, yeah, we'll have something next week. Jeff's not here to say goodnight, but Earl can. Earl, say goodnight.
Good night.